Welcome to the Clearly Christian Podcast with Dr. Cy Smith. It's time to know more so you can say no more. It's time for the Clearly Christian Podcast. Here's your host, Dr. Cy Smith.
I'm Dr. Cy Smith, and this is Clearly Christian, a podcast about what it means to see the world from God's perspective and the impact this has on training the next generation to live a life consistent with the biblical worldview. If you've been listening and you like what you hear, I hope you'll hit the subscribe button or leave a review. That'll let others know the show's worth checking out, and it'll help spread the word and serve our mission to make a difference. Fundraising. Well, just the mention of the word makes some leaders cringe. Whether it's personal solicitations for major gifts or creating flyers for the annual school auction, fundraising is the last thing that most leaders want to do. Yet even nonprofits need to make a profit. So every business is in search of sales, even schools. So why do we run from one of the very things we need the most? Well, our guest today says we need to shift our mindset on this issue, and I think he's exactly right. From the very beginning, Christian schools, like many nonprofits, were built on charity and philanthropy, never charging what it actually cost to educate a child, paying their teachers as if they were missionaries in a foreign field, and doing as much as they could for families with limited resources and funding. Fundraising made it possible to simply exist, and the pressure for those who were tasked with this role was enormous and often unbearable. Well, fundraising isn't a role or a function of a job. It's a strategic part of our business that not only generates revenue, but propels our mission for maximum impact. Schools as businesses don't typically think like this because we've inherited a public school mindset. That is, you get what you get as a result of living in this district. But there's two reasons why this thinking must change. First, as school choice sweeps the nation, there are a number of new models competing for customers, such as micro schools, hybrid charter schools, magnet schools, virtual schools, of course, private schools, and so forth. Second, schooling by its very nature is expensive and growing more so every year. The cost of hiring quality teachers, maintaining facilities, introducing new programs are often far beyond the reach of tuition. Well, as a result, then, Christian schools must determine what it is that they bring to this new marketplace that sets them apart and justifies their cost. In doing so, we begin to realize there's a partnership between purpose and profit. We realize that fundraising is really a combination of strategies that we use to advance our mission and create loyal stakeholders. We realize that fundraising isn't part of a job description. It's a documented plan to grow our organization. Well, again, this is a significant mind shift indeed. Our guest today really is an expert voice in this area and brings a very unique perspective here because he not only has the common fundraising role at a nonprofit Christian school, but he also runs a for-profit business that ultimately advances the same mission as the Christian school. Justin Savini is the advancement director at Delmarva Christian School in Delaware, and he's the CEO of Savini Solutions. In addition to leading the fundraising efforts at his high school alma mater, Justin helps purpose-driven organizations grow through consulting and creative services. He specializes in strategic planning, branding, marketing, and advancement initiatives. He's a graduate of Liberty University, where he's excelled academically, master's degree in executive leadership, and get this, a all-conference Division I pole vaulter. Wow, man, that's outstanding. I love these unique things that show up in those bios. So, Justin, welcome to the show. Great to have you. Appreciate you being here, my friend.
I'm thrilled to be here, Cy. Thanks for the invite.
Wow, congratulations. Yep, and it's awesome. Good to see you. Well, let's jump right on in. When it comes to fundraising and how we can actually use it as a strategy to build a better organization over time, because I'm sure many people, hopefully they didn't even tune us out when they heard that, but hopefully they said, okay, yep, there's an area where I need some help. There's an area that I want to hear more about. And so we don't often get to hear podcasts that are set up in this way. But let's start with your role at Delmarva. How'd you arrive at that role of advancement director at your alma mater? Tell us a little bit about your journey there.
Yeah, the simple answer is God. you know, I think his divine plan is what led me there. But after my time as a student at Liberty University, I actually worked for the university in enrollment and recruitment. And that's what I did for 6 years, worked with their online academy, which was their virtual K-12 program that they had launched. And When I came on board, I was one of the very first employees working on that. I think there were 600 students in the program when I came on board. Mm. When I left, I guess it was 6-7 years later, there was over 6,000 students. Now today there's over 24,000 students in that program with the online academy. But wow. my world of nonprofit Christian education, that's where it started, was really on the enrollment, admissions, recruitment side of things. But then my wife and I found out we were expecting our first child. Mm-hmm. I guess it's important to note as well, right out of school, I also started my own marketing business and was doing some digital marketing, online e-commerce based sales and marketing type of stuff. And so I've always had a bent towards the entrepreneurial, always loved working in that marketing, thinking creatively about how do we grow something. Maybe that comes from the pole vaulter background in me, right? Always chasing the next bar, always trying to be a little bit better than we were the day before. But that was really where things started. And so when we found out we were expecting our first child, I was from Delaware. My wife was from South Jersey. And we said, why are we going to raise our kids, you know, 7-8 hours away from their grandparents? And I'm the youngest of five. There's 16 grandkids now, and 14 of the 16 are right here within a, you know, 20-mile radius. And so it's a party. A Savini event is quite an adventure right now. But that was really, it was a family decision to come back to Delaware. And so I was thinking about taking any old sales job. I kind of knew that that's where my gifting was. Our marketing business had a lot of traction at the time, and it was enough to bring my wife home from her full-time work. But we really knew that I needed to continue to pursue something outside of that. And I just happened to check in with my alma mater, reached out to the head of school at the time and noticed that they had an opening for director of development. And I sent a message just saying, hey, how are things going? Talk to me about this role. And he called me right away. He was like, why are you moving home? What's going on? Like he knew me from the time I was a student back in high school. And he said, listen, we've been looking for this role for a while. And this is an important note because we've gotten it wrong before. There's a lot of turnover in the world of development and fundraising. And he said, I actually think that your skill set, your giftings, your unique storytelling and connection to our school, if you would consider this role, would be a perfect fit for you. And that was 10 years ago. And so I've been in that role there at Delmarva Christian for coming up on a decade. And man, the Lord has just used it in a way that I never could have expected. So fundraising, like for many people, was never something that I pursued, didn't go to school for it. I'm not even sure that you can go to school for it.
Right.
But it really did. It did find me, and it has been an absolute perfect fit for the way that God created me.
But you were probably what, a business or marketing major?
No, surprisingly, in undergrad, I did biblical studies with a minor in psychology. I thought I might go into like family and marriage counseling, maybe teaching. Was really, you know, all over the place when it came to pursuing a career. But quite frankly, if I'm being really transparent, the idea of doing the same thing for an entire career terrified me. You know, like I was at college to be an athlete and was like, I'm a good student. I better get a degree while I'm here. But really didn't have a clear occupational calling on my life at that point. And what I realize in hindsight now is the Lord was shaping and preparing and molding me for a journey that really probably didn't even fit within a career box. Yeah. And now, ironically, none of my days are ever the same because I'm working with different organizations with different strategies day to day. And it's just, that's our God, right? He molds and shapes and prepares us in all the ways that are a perfect fit.
Well, I would agree. And even though I was an education major and ended up in education, I kind of had the same mindset that I knew I wasn't going to teach for 30 years. And I thought, well, teaching, you have a lot of range of, you know, you can do many different things. You can be an administrator. You can go into the business side of things, work at a college level. And so, yeah, for a lot of those same reasons, I thought education provided a lot of those flexible opportunities. So basically, it was that first job at Liberty where you really started to connect with the business of Christian education. At what point did that conviction really take hold where you said, okay, I can merge my love of all these things with my personal conviction? Because you went to Delmarva, obviously, so you had that background in Christian education. Then you went on to a Christian college. At what point did it kick in with you and you said, yeah, this is a mission that I can really get behind from a career vocational, I can, our family is going to be built around this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, so a part of my journey, all the way up through 10th grade, I was in public education.
Oh, wow.
And my junior year of high school was when Delmarva Christian High School actually first opened its doors. And they were, you know, heavily marketing it. I had some relationships. In fact, was very close with the athletic director that stepped into that role on the onset. And again, this is just God's tapestry, right? I had just finished second in the state in the pole vault as a sophomore, was expected to be the state champion the next year as a junior, and was at a very athletically driven public school. And so it was a really big decision for me to step out of that environment and go to a brand new Christian school with 60 kids. But the athletic director, he did an amazing job of casting vision for what they wanted the school to be, and felt like I could be a really big part of that. At the same time, I think I was in that similar struggle that all Christian teenagers are, of battling flesh and faith, and, you know, finding myself in this ecosystem of, you know, how do I be the kid that chases all the things of the world, but also chases the Lord? And so I was feeling this internal tension that ultimately, through some conversations with my parents and friends, thought, you know what, this step into Delmarva Christian as a junior in high school would be a really good fit for me. And it was, like, it was a catalyst for the rest of everything, because what I stepped into at Delmarva, this is a big part of my testimony. Students are students, right? They're going to get into trouble. They're going to test the limits. The same trouble that I could find at a public school, I could find in a private school if I was really looking for it. Mm. But the difference is that I was in this ecosystem, what I call a tribe of mentors. I stole that from Tim Ferriss's book, but a tribe of mentors of people who genuinely cared about me holistically in my development. They weren't just teaching me core subjects. They were teaching me life. They were teaching me faith and, you know, biblical integration, biblical worldview education. I started to realize how far superior it was to just teaching a subject. Mm. And so now what I share with everybody is, when you try to teach any subject, by pulling God out of it, it's fragmented, right? If the creator of all things isn't at the foundation of the things that you're studying, then it's incomplete. It's always going to have questions that can't be answered. It's always going to, you know, fall short. And so ultimately what became apparent to me was, being in a Christian ecosystem where I could be poured into holistically, I realized was key for my development. But I also realized that it was key for everything that I was learning, because I could start from a foundation of truth. And so that was what set up for me to say, I definitely wanted to go to a Christian college. And so when you're a Division I prospect and you want to go to a Christian school, your options get lean really quick. And for me, it came down to Liberty University and actually Cedarville. They were my final two, and Liberty ended up being the right fit for me. And that's where I went. And, you know, my 4 years there were absolutely incredible, you know, more of the same, of just being in this ecosystem of Christian mentors, people who loved me, who loved Jesus, and were teaching and molding and guiding me from that perspective. And that set it apart from anything else that I could have experienced. And so that was probably where my conviction for Christian education stemmed from, was my personal experience of seeing both sides, living both sides.
Right, right.
And then, you know, that made it easy to say, when I was stepping into the job market, man, if there's an opportunity for me to serve at a place where I was served, what an honor that would be. It was easy for me to tell the story and to want to, you know, be contagious for others to come and have a similar experience and be a part of that in the same way that I was. And so it's interesting for me to look back on my career and say, holy cow, a huge part of it has been with my two alma maters, right? My first 6 years I was at Liberty, where I graduated college and did my graduate studies. And then I actually ended up teaching online for a number of years after that, even when I came back to Delaware. And then, you know, it was with Delmarva Christian, which poured into me incredibly heavy, just for 2 years, but those 2 years were significant. And, you know, gosh, I never imagined how significant they would be when I think now, full circle, coming back, being there as an employee for 10 years, my daughter is there now. And so, yeah, I am a huge champion for Christian education, and I can't think of something better to promote, whether I was getting paid to do it or not.
Right.
We will always be advocates for Christian ed.
Right. Well, I've heard similar stories, and you know, I've been around long enough to know that from my vantage point as the one on the other side of the table hiring people like you, you know, it's a great, great strategy when university administrators can employ those young graduates like you were back then. I look for our alums right away to employ them, because you're exactly right. When you have that experience where you graduate and then you immediately work with the university and you see the university or the K-12 school from the other side of the podium, so to speak, and you see behind the scenes, and you called it the ecosystem, when you work in that culture and you work in that environment and you start to get immersed in this biblical worldview day in and day out, you really take ownership of it, and you really start to see it from a more mature adult perspective. And it definitely breeds, you know, commitment and loyalty. And so I can so appreciate your story. And so we're always on the lookout for the next Justin Savinis to come to our school. So that guy at Del Mar, he knew exactly what he was doing when you reached out to him. Yeah, he was like, oh, boy, I'm not going to let this guy get away. So there you are now as the advancement director. What are you working on now as advancement director at Delmarva, and how do you communicate with your team there what it is that you do? Because like you said, some of your predecessors were not successful. It hadn't gone well for them. Yeah. So how do you communicate to them that, nope, it's going to go well with me, and here's why, because here's my role?
Yeah, I'm going to start with that one first, and then we'll go to what we're working on.
Sure.
It's very easy for somebody that's in a director of development, director of advancement, major gifts, you know, whatever you call it, anybody who's in a fundraising role, for the rest of the organization to look at them and say, that's their responsibility, yeah, right? Oh, good, we're here. There's the money guy, right? And it's very misunderstood. I think that it's very under-supported. You know, not financially sometimes, but also by administration, by boards. Because it's so misunderstood and it's often looked at as this necessary evil rather than an extension of the ministry. And, you know, so the communication that we have internally is that this is a huge part of what we do here. It's our way to communicate and connect with the community where we serve. And Delmarva Christian is unique in that it's not that unique, but it's still in its infancy, right? It just had its 21st graduating class. It doesn't depend on its alumni base, right? I'm one of the oldest alumni of the school. Most of them aren't in their prime philanthropy years, though we are starting to cultivate hearts of stewardship in our alumni and looking at ways to be able to do that. We have largely had to depend on the community that surrounds us for our fundraising needs. And so that means connecting with businesses, philanthropists, you know, key people in the community who believe passionately in our mission and can support and make things happen. Mm. And so maybe I'm direct enough that I can share with our entire team, hey, listen, guys, like this whole thing doesn't happen without the support of our community. So it needs to be something that we're all about. But at the end of the day, I really do think that it comes from that heart of conviction and just finding people in the community that are as passionate about it as we are. Right. Take the salesy elements of, you know, hey, we got to beat the pavement and we've got to ask five times, right? All those traditional sales tactics. If we strip all of that away and say, what does it look like to tell the story of Delmarva Christian, to share the impact of Christian education and what it does with key people and see who it resonates with? And when those natural connections boil up, if you're willing to lean in and build relationships in those places, the finances is a byproduct of that. Most of the time, you know, the right people who are going to come on board and be champions of Christian education from a financial perspective, right? They're going to ask the question of how can we help? The Lord's already blessed them with resources. They chances are they have a stewardship mindset, especially in our faith-based, you know, culture. We hope they do. And they're really just trying to figure out, they're asking God the same question. Lord, what do you want me to do with this overflow you've blessed me with? And so we're just telling them a story and saying, hey, this is one of the places that God is doing incredible work. Is this a place where you want to steward the resources that God has blessed you with? And so making it less salesy and more of an opportunity to just share the story and passionately connect with people. And I think that that has really helped us to fold more people into the mix and it to be less understood. Another thing that I guess I'll say about that too is, you know, well, this is a good bridge, I guess. We're in a major capital campaign right now. To my knowledge, it is one of the largest capital campaigns in all of the ACSI network right now. We're wrapping up a $34 million campus expansion, over 90,000 square feet in buildings, 60 acres, you know, that are under construction right now. It's going to be about a $34 million price tag. We've raised $29.5 million in the last 3 years. And so I think that our team has really understood that if we were going to go to the next level, this was not, this was something that had to happen. But we also have been really good in our articulation of, you know, if it's God's will, it's God's bill. It's not going to happen because Justin Savini is so great or our team is so great. We're going to be faithful. We're going to work really hard. And we have worked really hard. Like, we're not going to discount that fact, right? But at the same time, we've known from the jump for a major effort like that to be successful when you're relying not on an increase in tuition dollars or anything like that, but strictly community support and the movement of God's hand in the form of resources. We're going to just bathe it in prayer and we're going to watch God show up through our intentional work. And so I think deferring that responsibility from the team and saying, hey, this is God's responsibility. Our responsibility is just to be faithful, tell the story, fill the gaps and do what's being asked of us. That'll hopefully relieve some pressure in that from the team as well to realize, man, this is just an exercise of championing God's work through Christian education. Money's a byproduct of that.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's no script for what we do in Christian schools, and you're exactly right. $34 million, phenomenal. And as our show producer knows and others that have watched this show, we're doing $30 million here at MCS, and exact same philosophy. There's no script for, hey, just do one, two, and three. I mean, there's some good outlines out there, and you can certainly go some places to get some good resources and how to put together feasibility studies and things like that. But at the end of the day, when you're a nonprofit, you are relying on, I've got this vision, and I think it is of the Lord, and he seems to be leading us in this direction. And the men and women that are leading our organization are praying through this, and we really believe this is what God has for us. And I love that phrase, if it's God's will, it's God's bill. I'm going to have to use that. I'm going to have to use that a little bit more. That's comforting, you know, again, and a good quick reminder. Yeah, he's not going to take you places and then say, well, yeah, I'm sorry the entire thing collapsed, but you just didn't work hard enough or you didn't do what you need to do and blah, blah, blah. You know, if we can remain sensitive and follow where he's leading, then I think you're exactly right. And that takes some pressure off of you and, like you said, the team and not, okay, yep, it's this guy's role. He's got the title on the door. Great points. You wrote in a blog, and I love this phrase, and I used it in my intro, profit and purpose aren't opposites, they're partners. And I thought that was great. Tell us what you meant by that in terms of the context and when it comes to a purpose-driven organization that you and I get to be a part of.
Yeah, for sure. So in my first year as director of development at Delmarva Christian, I remember one of our donors said to me this phrase I've never forgotten. She said, Justin, no margin, no mission. And it was something that has stuck with me in this realization of we cannot do the things that we do on this side of heaven without money, right? I don't know why it's a part of our ecosystem, but it is. Like there's no such thing as, you know, accomplishing excellence without the resource of money. And so it's a big part of what, it's the fuel in the tank, right? And so you can have the most incredible vision, if we parallel it to a Lamborghini, right? You can have the most incredible vehicle sitting in the garage, but if it does not have fuel in it, it will not go anywhere and it cannot fulfill its purpose. And so, yeah, you can have all these grandiose ideas and, you know, you can know what you want to do and where you want to go, but if there's no fuel in it, it's not going to go anywhere. And so I think that that's the idea of we can't shy away from this reality. I think sometimes, and there's this fine line here, right? I say if it's God's will, it's God's bill. And we always feel this tension that exists between faith and works, stewardship and resting in the Lord. I think that these things absolutely do coexist and they can, but there is something that the Lord is looking for us to do, right? There's an action component of this, a responsibility that is in it. But at the end of the day, you know, that responsibility has to lead to stewarding resources well so that the purpose itself can happen. And so I think that that's what I mean by that. And so many times I think, you know, schools can take the complacency. It's, you know, they mask it in contentment or waiting in the Lord or some of these phrases that sound really spiritual, but in reality, it's a lack of responsibility and care for the financial stewardship of the organization. And it's just like, well, we're going to wait on the Lord. And it's like, I think the Lord might be waiting on you. I don't know if that's theologically sound, but there is a bit of get up and go that I think is in almost every story in Scripture of amazing work, where the Lord prods, but then we respond to his call and we do something. And so I think that that's, you know, my big message to almost every organization is, yes, wait on the Lord, have faith. It is all in his hands. But at the end of the day, there's some action and responsibility in that. And your purpose will only be fulfilled if you can find a way to go get the money that's going to make the thing happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really good wrap up, or even maybe just a segue to the point that why it's so significant that we're talking about this issue, especially for school leaders, is because, listen, it's hard, like I said, and people run from it. And they're not comfortable doing, they don't have a lot of training here, and it scares them to death, right? Nobody wants to be that person. And people probably think, man, I can't believe you wanted to be the advancement director. All you're going to do is like selling used cars, you know, and who wants that job? And that's not it at all. And that's what I was trying to say mm-hmm. at the outset. And so there's such a need for this message to get into all nonprofits, but especially nonprofit Christian schools, that your mindset has to change if you're going to be successful. And, you know, you're going to have to look at it a different way, just like what you were saying earlier, because it is a challenge. And so many are just anxious to say, you know what, that's more work than I want to put in. And I don't even know where to go for help. I don't even know the resources. I don't know who to talk to about this, because none of my friends do this job and nobody wants this job. So who's even going to give me some advice here?
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe what are some of the other challenges that you have faced even as advancement director in just, you know, some obstacles to, is it just that and just trying to communicate what it is you do, or what are some other maybe challenges you face?
Yeah, there's a lot. I think at the core of it, I mentioned it earlier, there's just a fundamental misunderstanding of the role and how critical it is. And so I think sometimes it's this secondary thing of, oh, I guess we have to do that. And so some people will get stuck in this. I wrote a blog a few months ago that was, you know, about the line of like, fundraising isn't something that you have to do. I mean, technically, like, there's nothing on paper that says a nonprofit has to fundraise.
Right.
Right. You could find other ways to do it, I guess. But it is a great privilege that we get to fundraise. It is something that a nonprofit is allowed to do. You know, a for-profit organization, they can raise venture capital, but it's got these strings attached to it. And, you know, people expect returns and things of that nature. You know, the return that we're really looking for, you know, is the mission being fueled. There's not that same tension there. So what a privilege it is that we have to be able to add to our bottom line, or, you know, I really even like to, you know, think of it as, you know, that overflow. How do I get organizations to a place where they're not fundraising just to survive, but their fundraising dollars are helping them thrive? Yeah. That's a privilege to be able to source revenue for a mission to take it from where it is to the next level. That's really what it should do. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think getting people to that place, where they understand, oh, this is actually a really exciting part of what can happen here at our organization, rather than, oh my gosh, like, we got to do another pancake breakfast or another silent auction or another golf tournament, because, you know, it's just this thing that we've always done. And when that switch can flip to, man, this is a critical component of the engine that allows us to do everything else, you know, and it's seen as a prime function of the school, then all of a sudden it becomes very exciting. And I think that's the big challenge, is getting a board to that place of understanding that it's not just pure academia. We love academics. Yes, that is a part of our core mission. But at the end of the day, right, if there isn't the margin to fulfill that mission, it's not going to happen. So this isn't this sidetrack. It is absolutely prime to making the main thing the main thing.
Yeah, that's so key. And we'll talk about that in a moment, but I love that. And you're exactly right. getting all those pieces of the organization to understand that same point and to say, nope, this is not a sidebar, a luxury, you know, a necessary evil, all of those things. No, but it is focused. It is a key piece of what it is that we're doing and have to get to our mission. So, yeah, completely agree there. Tell us about Slovenia Solutions. How did this work then grow out of this same kind of conviction, grow out of your work with fundraising? So you start this business, which, as I said in the intro, really you do a lot of the same thing. Tell us about that role.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And again, it's another thing that I feel like it was one of those doors that the Lord blew open and we just walked faithfully through. We had created Savini Solutions LLC back in 2020 as an avenue to run some freelance, you know, side work that we had been doing, mostly in the marketing. My wife was doing some freelance writing for a hospital as a creative writer, and we needed an entity to run it through. And as, you know, the campaign was unfolding and we were making some hard decisions as a family, and I was, I told you I was entrepreneur from the jump. I was doing a million things, right? Still had this e-commerce marketing business. I was running cars out on Turo. I was flipping shoes, you know, anything that I could for my family to be able to survive and thrive and to have resources to not just be blessed, but to be a blessing to others. And I was running ragged. You know, we had two children with a third on the way. And I was like, man, like if there was a way to condense and focus on something, that would probably be a better path. And that came from some wise counsel from somebody else. I'm like, Justin, how do you streamline this a little bit?
Right.
But what was interesting is there was a common thread that was happening in that as I was getting requests over and over again of, man, talk to me about what you've done at Delmarva, right? You've raised over $40 million in your career there. Like we're struggling to raise any money where we are. Like, how do you do that? Constant invites to coffee. Could you help us with that? At the same time, you know, there was this common thread too of as I was doing, you know, pro bono conversations with people about things, I realized they all needed creative support, you know, to make that fundraising go. Like they needed video, they needed materials, things of that nature. And the Lord crossed paths for me with some really amazing creatives who had the gift of creating, but didn't necessarily have the gift of driving and building a business. And so I was like, gosh, what if I could partner with these guys? I've kind of got that executive mentality. I could run the ship, find the clients, right? Sell the mission, those types of things. And then I've got this amazing team behind me that can make things go. It was really like the Lord just kind of said, hey, Justin, go. Had a great conversation with the head of school at Delmarva and the board about what was on my heart and some of the things that we're doing. And they gave me their blessing. And that was really ultimately the green light to start saying yes, to saying, hey, there's a formal capacity by which I could help some other nonprofits. And so we've had a unique blend of clients, nonprofits, some for-profits. We've done some like master classes as well, pulling people in and teaching them some of these mindsets that we've been talking about today. And really just finding a way to formalize a business entity where ultimately we could equip and help people move the needle again from where they are to where they want to be, and provide them with some of those thought processes, mindsets, but not just the mentality, but also the execution pieces, right? We can also jump into the framework and help them move the needle through creative services and things. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. You mentioned master classes. You may want to mention what that is for the listener who may not know. What's a master class? That might, you know, you and I know that language, but that might be something you're interested in. And then what are some other things that you would do to take organizations, you know, hey, listen, we're stuck in the old mental fundraising model. And we know we love what Cy and Justin are saying. We'd love to move from fundraising to strategic planning and not just a SWOT analysis, right? That's all we know about strategic planning. What are some things maybe that you would do at Savini Solution to help them, you know, like a masterclass? What would you do to walk them through hey, let's take you from this shift of thinking from one A to B?
Yeah. So the way that we structure our classes at Savini Solutions is they're 6-month experiences, 12 units that are taught basically biweekly, so twice a month over six months.
Okay.
Is how as a 12 session course works. And it's a small group cohort. I don't allow more than 10 people to be in the course. So it allows people to like really talk about what they're struggling through. So we have key units that we're walking through every time that we're together that are, you know, very targeted, but they are meant to flush out discussion amongst peers where we can problem solve together and build and use muscle. One of the things that I talk about all the time, and this is why I serve both nonprofits and small businesses, is they all have the challenge of they're so busy working in their business that they never work on it. And so the design of the masterclass is to trap time in their schedule where they can work on their mission and vision, you know, whatever it is that they are trying to propel, you know, whether that's running an excellent construction company or it's, you know, a nonprofit radio station, whatever lane that they're in, there is still a mission that they're trying to accomplish and they need to be able to move the needle. They want to accelerate. And so that's why we built those. Was an opportunity to be able to pull leaders together to think and problem solve together, but in a guided way. Another way that we serve, particularly on the nonprofit side, is through feasibility studies for organizations that are considering a major capital lift. They're one of feasibility studies have been a big blessing to me in my career of being able to test the waters, figure out capacity. But basically, it's an analysis that we do for an organization where we do a lot of interviewing of their donor population, basically their entire constituency to figure out, hey, if you were, so take a church, for example, that wants to raise $5 million for a new building. When we are able to come in and survey congregants of that church and say, is this even a project that you support? Do you want it? What are the pros? What are the cons? What are your thoughts on leadership within the church right now? How are they communicating? How could they be better? So we're not just looking at dollars and cents, but we're actually looking at the organization holistically to say, is this group healthy enough to do a major capital campaign, right? Do they have the leadership in place to be able to do it? Because when you launch a major fundraising campaign, it's a whole nother business. I tell people what we're doing a pop-up, whatever your goal is, if it's a $10 million segment, we're doing a pop-up $10 million business over the next 36 months, right? If you've got a three-year goal to raise $10 million, this is a pop-up $10 million business over the next 3 years. It's going to take leadership. It's going to take capacity. It's going to take teams to be able to make that happen. I don't know many people who just can drive an extra $10 million on the side.
Right.
It's pretty rare. So it does take leadership and capacity and preparedness. And so we're evaluating a bit of that. And then the last piece is capacity. We're trying to figure out, are the right people in place financially that can make something like that happen? So we're testing those waters for people, getting critical feedback so that they can make what we call a data-driven decision. Yes, you have to lay that data before Jesus once you get it and ultimately decide, like, what does God want done here? In Delmarva Christian's case, right, we did a feasibility study. Our study said that we could raise $17 million. That was enough for us to step out of faith. But like I told you earlier, we've raised almost 30, you know? So sometimes feasibility studies, you know, we always try to be a bit conservative in ours, quite frankly, rather than the opposite. But sometimes the Lord has something different in mind than a study does. And you just step back and you watch him work. But it at least gives you a baseline of wisdom to be able to make a decision from. So feasibility studies are something that we do. We love doing them to evaluate preparedness, but it also is great preparation work for if a organization is healthy enough to step into a campaign. Now we've got a baseline of data. We've identified some potential lead donors, right? We understand how people are feeling, what we need to shore up. And now I can step in into a coaching consulting role with a bit more information to hopefully then be able to walk alongside of an organization and help them with timelines and key strategies, events, design, right? And then all the way, because we have a creative team, we can help with videography, photography, all those creative elements that may be needed there. So we're doing those types of things. We have a full gamut of, you know, marketing services as well, where we're doing social media management and things like that for organizations that maybe can't afford to have somebody in-house. You know, they'll partner with us to do those things just because we have the people in place. And as long as impact is their focus, again, we know that you need profit to do an impact, but as long as impact is their focus and it's not just profit, we will work with them.
Yeah.
If their sole goal is just to raise more or make more money to make more money, I'm out.
Yeah. 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 How do Christian schools then respond as customers? I mean, are you finding that as you're out there selling Savini Solutions that, man, Christian schools really are gravitating to your message, they get it, they're signing up on board, or are they going, oh boy, this is probably going to require even more work for me, and I'm still, it makes me nervous. I don't know if it's, like you said, it's a whole different role. We don't have the infrastructure mm-hmm. for it. Where do they fall as customers to Savini?
Yeah, it's the latter. Unfortunately, you know, yeah. Christian schools have been probably one of my most hesitant clients. And the reason is, and again, it's a mindset that has to flip, but it's the, gosh, we wish we could afford you. And sometimes I want to bluntly, and maybe I should say, no, you can't afford to not afford me.
Yeah.
Right. It's that kind of thing of, you know, imagine, right, your personal dollars. If you could, let's just say a consulting fee, I'm just throwing out, you know, round figures, whatever it is. Let's say it was $100,000 to work with me for a year or work with any group for a year. Take me out of the equation. And that $100,000 investment, you know, yielded an additional $5 million for your organization. I don't know a single business owner that wouldn't take that deal to be able to turn $100,000 into $5 million. Well, if your goal is $5 million, right, and that's what you need to move the needle to the next level, then be willing to make that investment, especially if you've got data that supports it. If you have no data that supports it, then maybe you shouldn't, right, take on that level of risk or whatever it may be. But I absolutely see this. We're already running a negative budget. There's just no way that we could ever, you know, afford. And it's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
And I always tell people, man, you should go out, find a donor who believes in what you're doing so much that they'll front the bill. And I've even offered this to organizations. I will help you pro bono find a donor that would pay my consulting fees for a year. Because that's, and I've seen donors get really excited about doing that. Because what that tells them is, well, then we're going to put the infrastructure and the coaching in place that I won't be alone in this effort for the school anymore, right? Because they're going to put the infrastructure in place to actually yield, you know, a multiplication factor on the back end. And so it's a little bit of a different thought process, but the scarcity mindset has crushed Christian education for as long as it has existed.
Yeah.
And one thing that I see as a common denominator among the Christian schools that are thriving and the ones that are struggling is, you know, scarcity mindset versus growth and prosperity mindset. And I don't say that from like a health, wealth, prosperity, like gospel perspective, but it's this idea of how do we champion and elevate? We're willing to take risk. We're willing to move. We're willing to put the pieces in place. We're willing to act like a business because we are one versus we can't afford to pay our teachers. We can't afford to have excellent athletics. We can't, and this can't word that I used to have to do push-ups for every time in college when I used it. If we can get that out of the vocabulary and say, no, you can, let's flip it. How could you afford a director of development? How could you afford a consultant? What does it look like to be able to bridge that gap so that you can finally put some energy and focus on working on this part of your process so that you have the sustainability to step in at the next level? And so it is a really hard battle to fight because Christian schools are already pressed and squeezed. And, you know, when they look at, gosh, should I hire this support staff or this teacher, or should I hire a director of development or a fundraiser or a consultant, right? They often lean internal with their investment. The problem is the internal investment has no, typically, you could argue this with me, but there, most of those internal positions do not have a multiplying factor from a revenue perspective. A development director, a fundraising department, is one of the only departments in a nonprofit that has the ability to have a multiplication come out of it. And so that's why I'm a huge advocate of find the money to fund a fundraising department so that you can get it in motion, you know, get it right, get the right people there, because it's the only thing that can truly accelerate and multiply for you. And this is why hospitals have foundations. This is why you look at all of the major successful nonprofits that aren't struggling, and this is a well-oiled machine they all have. So we would do well in Christian education to follow suit. Look at universities, right? I mean, their alumni departments are massive. Their fundraising teams are huge. But it is the reason by which they're able to sustain and provide all the programming and all the different schools and all the funding and all the athletics that they do. It's all driven by great philanthropy work. And we would do well to learn from them and mirror that in our community schools.
Yeah, yeah, you're exactly right. And you and I have been preaching that message for a few years now. And you as a business and me just from the trenches of experience, you know, because
sure.
I've lived through that, you know, since I've done this for over 30 years, I know exactly what you're saying. And I've seen many a scarcity mindset, you know, ruin a school. And I can see exactly what you're saying in terms of we're still dragging that around. And one of the words you used early on that I don't think is so foreign to Christian schools, and here's part of the problem, is this word investment. Because to make an investment, yeah, I have to have some margin, right? I have to have some capital to work with. So we show a profit, and what do I do then? How do I reinvest in my company to make it better? I can tell you right now, over 30 decades in Christian schools, we just don't talk like that at board meetings and
right,
in our business meetings. Now, we do now at Mansfield Christian because I've brought that vernacular to us. But
yeah,
for the most part, since the 1960s, when most Christian schools can trace their origins back to the 60s and 70s, those that have been around a long time, you know, we just never said anything like that. We said, let's break even,
yeah,
and hopefully not lose money. So you're exactly right. Last question then, you know, it just as you think about summarizing this, then how do people like you and me help this culture in Christian schools think more like a business? Because I know one of the things that I was taught early on was, hey, boy, you know, you can't look at kids like checks. You know, they're not little paychecks, and you can't, you know, mm-hmm, you can't, they have to be people, and right, your personnel are people. And there was some great wisdom in that, but it really harmed the business side of the school in that we just thought everybody with a master's degree in education should know how to run a school, and that wasn't the
yeah,
case at all. And most of us, you know, and I've long said I've got 3 degrees in education, but I sure wish one of them was an MBA or some classes in
yeah,
finance and business and things like that, or at least more experience running a business, because now I'm running a multi-million dollar business and my ability to understand profit margin is crucial. So how do we get that
yeah,
message out there to schools, or what should we be telling CEOs of schools since we've got them now on the podcast? What do you want
yeah,
them to remember here?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I can't remember if it was you that said this to me, but the line of, you know, just because we're not for profit doesn't mean that we're for loss.
Yeah.
And I think the number one thing that we have to get through our heads is nonprofit doesn't mean you can't profit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the most successful and stable schools that I know is out of the overflow of, you know, resources, they've built endowments, and those endowments can, you know, hold and sustain them and weather them through storms and things of that nature. We just received a large grant from a foundation, you know, the largest foundation here in Delaware, Longwood Foundation. It's tied to Longwood Gardens. But we were a recipient of one of their grants this cycle. And I went up to a grantee celebration where, you know, I got to hear from their president. And we did some roundtable discussion. And one of the things, this was somebody not in education at all, in the nonprofit world, but not in education. And she was talking about how for a long time in nonprofit work in general, it was like frowned upon to have reserves, because if you had reserves, that meant you didn't have need. And so there was this fundamental brokenness in this nonprofit world. I can even remember as a student at Liberty University assuming like, oh, the reason that they plant a lot of mulch at the end of the year and do all these nice things is because they're not allowed to make profit. So any excess they have, they have to spend it. And I'm like, no, that's not true at all. So I think fundamentally we need to let people understand, like, what is the difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit? I don't think people even know that. And the only difference is that a for-profit is designed so that individuals can profit from the excess. Well, in a nonprofit, individuals don't, you know, gain from it, but the organization can. So if you have a really great year, there's some really exciting things that you can do with those resources. It doesn't mean you're not allowed to. And so I think getting to this place of, oh, we're allowed to make money, and the byproduct of having that money allows us to have reserves for the future. It allows us to have nicer things, to add programs, to bolster and strengthen what we're doing, right? Something that I was taught in finance very early on in my career is like money is the Bible. Dave Ramsey says this, right? Money is not the root of all evil. right? The love of money is, but money itself is just a tool. And I would rather that tool be in the hands of really great Christian educators, right? Than to be in the hands of, you know, the IRS or anything else for that matter, right? I mean, we want great leaders to have great resources, and it's okay. So that's my message to CEOs, school leaders, is like, it's okay for you to have great resources. It's okay for you to have margin. You didn't do something wrong if you have reserve left over at the end of the year.
Right, right.
Because man, you can really start to dream. Imagine what would be possible at your school if you had an extra $1 million left over every year. Imagine. What could you do? What could you fund? And if you have a dream session like that, I think you're going to get way more energy out of the ones that you're having right now that are, how do we sustain this for 5 more years?
Yeah, exactly right.
So I think that that's that mentality that we've got to get people to this place of, hey, you're allowed to do this, right? Let's look at a multi-pronged approach. Yeah, let's look at tuition. Let's look at fundraising. Let's look at rental income. Let's look at these things that we could do to get to a really healthy place financially, so that our mission can thrive and our conversations aren't about how do we sustain this? How do we survive? But how do we do everything with excellence?
Yeah.
And that conversation shifts the tone of an organization significantly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, I appreciate it, man. We could talk about this all day because this is the world I'm living in. And so it's timely for me to hear it again and to just continue to, you know, let it stir in me as well as I do similar to work to what you're doing and pick up that work just day in and day out. So great stuff, brother. Appreciate you sharing. As we close, if they want to know more about Justin Savini or Delmarva Christian or Savini Solutions, what can they do? What do you want to give out for them?
I am not hard to find. There aren't too many Justin Savinis on the planet, so I should show up pretty high in Google's rankings if you look at that. But SaviniSolutions.com is a great way to find me. Certainly, you can find my contact information at DelmarvaChristian.com as well. But I'm on social media as at Justin Savini. At Savini Solutions also is out there as well. Would love for you to follow along. I do a free newsletter every single month called The Compass, that you can subscribe to through the Savini Solutions website, where I'm honestly just sharing what I'm learning and what the Lord's laid on my heart and some nuggets of leadership that I'm just passing along information that's been passed to me that I found really useful, and would love to stay connected with people in that way and just add value any way that I can, especially to Christian organizations that are focused on expanding the kingdom. And that's where it really comes down to for us, is we want to see the kingdom grow through excellence. And, you know, I say all the time, if we're doing all things as unto the Lord, right, what does that look like as an outcome? It should be excellence. It should be fantastic. And that's what we're all about, is doing all things as unto the Lord and setting the bar really high as a byproduct of that, because it's all for Jesus.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you do great work. I subscribe to The Compass, so listeners, I can tell you it's well worth subscribing to. Justin has great thoughts. He writes good blogs, and I really think Savini Solutions would be a good resource for you if you're looking to go down this road. And as he said, so many schools are balking at this because they're just hesitant, not really sure what to do with some of the margin, or still trying to get there when it comes to margin. And I'd encourage you to look hard at that and consider some of the wisdom in our conversation today. Well, thank you so much again, Justin. Let me make 2 chalkboard points for you to consider remembering as we wrap up our show today. Point number 1, listen, successful organizations have learned to change their mindset when it comes to fundraising. This is not about asking people for money. Fundraising is about creating strategies and initiatives that will amplify your mission. It's often deep work that can take time because it focuses on relationships, not simply transactions. When we invite others to be a part of something meaningful, we can transform the life of the donor and transform the story of your organization. Point number 2, any successful organization will be involved in marketing, branding, strategic planning, and other initiatives that are designed to drive consuming behavior. Christian school leaders must recognize that this applies to their school as well. Even if this is not your personal skill set, you must build a team infrastructure that encourages this type of work. You can no longer take these things for granted and assume that just having Christian in your name will attract the right audience. You must be proactive in determining what your school brings to the marketplace and what sets you apart to justify the cost. Well, that's our lesson for today, and now you know more. When you know more, you can do more. You can not only think differently, but you can act differently, make a change, live out your convictions, and say no more if you must. Well, again, thank you for joining me today on the Clearly Christian Podcast, and I trust that now you know more about why it's important to shift your mindset on fundraising and the impact this will have on both your purpose and your profit. Again, if you like the show today, let us know by following along or subscribing. Hit the like button for me. That'll let others know the show is worth checking out as well and make a difference. I certainly appreciate that. Remember, the only way we're going to turn things around in our country is to increase the number of people who hold a biblical worldview and live that out. And the greatest hope to get there is Christian education. Thank you again for listening. I'm Dr. Cy Smith with Clearly Christian.
Thank you for listening to the Clearly Christian Podcast with Dr. Cy Smith. Hear more episodes at clearlychristianeducation.com. If you'd like more information about Christian education in your neighborhood, or if you're interested in education opportunities at Mansfield Christian School, or if you agree with Dr. Smith and want to help him in his mission to influence and awaken Christian America, you can send Dr. Smith an email through the clearlychristianeducation.com website. Message him on the Clearly Christian LinkedIn or Facebook page, or call the Clearly Christian Connection Line at 419-756-5651. This has been the Clearly Christian Podcast with Dr. Cy Smith on clearlychristianeducation.com, brought to you in conjunction with Mansfield Christian School, a Bryan Media production.